Welcome to the latest Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. My guest today is Amy O'Connor, Chief Data and Information Officer at Precisely. Today we're going to talk about the challenges for a Chief Data Officer and what that means for business. Hello, Amy.
Hello, Ian. It's wonderful to chat with you today. As you mentioned, I hold both the Chief Data Officer and the Chief Information Officer roles here at Precisely. I was wondering, to set the stage, would it help if I explained my mission?
That would be brilliant.
Okay, great. I have four imperatives. The first three are around that CIO role, but they're important to consider when we think about the Chief Data Officer. First, in a CIO role, you've got to lead a team to operate the company efficiently and securely. Second, we're a very acquisitive company. Even right now, we're integrating our acquisition of Infogix, and we just announced our acquisition of Windshuttle. So my second priority is to integrate these acquired businesses into our Precisely IT infrastructure and our business processes. And then third, because we're such a rapidly growing business, and our Precisely brand is only a year old, and though we're the compilation of many different acquisitions and now one of the largest data management companies in the world, I still have a lot of digital transformation projects on my agenda. Those are my three CIO imperatives. Operate, integrate, transform. Then finally, with all of those critical business imperatives, in my Chief Data Officer role, I set the agenda and lead the way to run all of those using our data.
If we look around the market at the moment, there are a lot of people being called Chief Data Officers who won't have anything like the scope that you have. But similarly, they may not even have a definition for what the Chief Data Officer is. What should a Chief Data Officer's role be?
Eventually, data will be valued on the balance sheet of businesses. From a digital transformation perspective, I do think it's one of the most valuable assets of any business. From my perspective, the Chief Data Officer is the person to lead the charge in building that data asset for the entire corporation. Building a data asset that means integrating data from multiple sources, verifying and fixing the quality of the data, geolocating it when appropriate, and enriching it with third-party data sets. It's got to be cross-functional, breaking down silos. What we see a lot in a lot of different businesses are people build the data needed for a use case in a fit for purpose. Well, I just need it for that use case. I only care about these fields, and I only care about maybe this region or something like that. But the Chief Data Officer has to take the broader view while helping to build data to be used in a particular use case, really build it in a way that's automated so that it's reusable, it's of high quality, and then your next use case and your next use case can build right on top of it.
If we think about other C-suite roles, in particular that of the CISO, we found ourselves with a split role. Part of that role is technical, understanding what goes on in the security side, but part of that is as much being a friend to the board and a politician. It kind of sounds that the Chief Data Officer is going to find themselves in exactly that problem. They're going to have to understand the technology going on underneath them, but at the same time, they've got to be able to get the board to understand risk. They've got to be able to get the board to understand value, but they've also got to understand what the board wants from data. How challenging is that going to be?
Extremely challenging. You are spot on, Ian. It's a split brain thing where you really do have to be technical enough, and you have to be data savvy. You have to understand data sources and where they come from. You have to understand analytical methods and how the data is going to be consumed. But if you are within that realm, you're going to get stuck. Because if you can't turn around and explain the value of working on this data and making it better and better, then you're not going to get the investment that you need in order to make that asset solve for multiple purposes. You've got to have both sides of that equation, got to be value-driven, able to explain why the investment makes sense, be able to create that vision for the future as to where you can go. And I just keep coming back to, I see data ending up on balance sheets eventually. How do you get it there? You've got to have that advocate that understands technically enough about it to be able to grasp those nuggets and turn it around into that compelling, value-driven story for the board.
One of the challenges we have with data is that companies are acquiring more data than ever before. The problem is they don't know what of that data has value. They don't know what in that data is sensitive. They don't know what they can throw away and ignore. When we've done looks at this in the past, we've tried data classification as to what is secret, what is private. We've also tried to tier data, but that's really about what data needs to be accessed immediately and what can be left for periods of time. Do we need a revisitation of how we structure data and the types of data that we're gathering?
If you structure data too early in the process, then you're almost getting back to that fit for purpose. I'm a huge advocate. I love the data lake. Data needs to be brought together so you can scrub it. You can start to look at it and understand it. You can profile it. And from that perspective, you don't make that available to everyone in the business. That's quite frankly is something that exists for a small center of excellence, a set of people who are going to be focused in on the data itself. From there, you extract portions of data and move it to data warehouses so that it can be used across the business more generally, start to extract the data and transform it into functional data marts that can be used by different business functions, marketing and sales and all that. It's not so much like the evolving structure of the schema. It's a little bit more of thinking about it in those larger buckets. You think about getting everything that looks appropriate to be this asset into a lake and then work on it over time to hone in and fix the quality of it and enrich it and then move it to a mart where it can be used for a specific use case or move it to another portion of the lake that can be used for machine learning types of use cases.
I can imagine people at the moment shouting at the podcast when you're saying you don't make that data available to everybody, because the discussion for the last 2 years has all been about data democratization to remove data elitism. Yet, to some degree, we need a balance of both. How do you get that balance?
Data democratization, to me, it's got to be for the purpose. What is the purpose for which someone needs the data? Which is why I think that functional data marts make a ton of sense. Somebody in a particular functional area doesn't necessarily want to see all the nitty-gritties about the detailed data that came from source systems when it was created, or depending upon what industry you're in, they clearly don't want to see details of IoT data. You need data processing people that are building automated pipelines that produce a product that can then be consumed in a democratized way. To me, the democratization of data is that the use case can be built by someone else. They have the data they need to access it, but they don't have to muck around in all of the data from source on up through all the transformations, the enrichment, the quality work that has to get done on it. That's where over the past 5-7 years, we've run into a lot of stumbling blocks across all industries in that everyone that's doing an analytical use case almost ends up having to work the data themselves to get it into the right shape, to get it of the right integrity for their use case. That's wasting your analytical talent. And you've got to have really good talent in the data space as well. If you do that, you do create this asset that can be used by many people throughout the business. That's democratizing the data. You've given them the data they need. You've given them the data that's in a good enough shape to be used for all those different use cases.
There's a whole bunch in there to take apart. Let's start with those use cases. If we go back 20 years, we kind of knew what we had data for. It was for transactional purposes generally. It was accounts. It was orders. It was a small group of other purposes within the business. Today, I doubt many companies could give you an easy list of the use cases for their data. How do we start to understand those use cases? Because we can't go back to the old idea of a data analyst going out to users, because quite frankly, users don't want that. They want to be able to do some of this definition themselves. There seems to be a step missing here in ease of use when it comes to defining use cases.
Defining use cases is tough because you almost need to know, do you have the right data for the use case? Do you have the right use case for the data? So you end up in that quandary. However, in 10 years in working in this space, I've found across every industry, across the globe, I'd say the majority of use cases fall into three categories. The first category is know your customer. Oh, we've been talking about customer 360 forever, right? But the fact of the matter is, why are you in business? Why are you running a government agency? It's all on behalf of the people that you're serving. The more you know about them, their preferences, what's working for them, what's not working for them, behaviors, location matters. Everything about those customers matter. I've also said in the past, I don't believe you ever get to customer 360, because if you did, you'd be done and your business wouldn't be growing, right? Your relationship with your customer wouldn't be evolving. I tend to call it customer 10 degree, not 360 degree. So that's like a ton of use cases fit into that category. If you wrap your head around that, then you can start to think about what are the things that we can do? What are the little things we can do here and there that could help us to better know our customers? Category number two, which is obviously related, is, am I building the right products and services for those customers? What do I know about my products and services? Go way back, all products and services were disconnected. You knew what people were using when you shipped it to them and it showed up and they went and used it. Now, with everything being connected, those are data streams coming off. The exhaust that comes off of all these connected products is enlightening about how well are these products and services working for the customer. So that's category number two. Anybody who's in that R&D space, the product space, the innovation space, what do I know about what I currently have and what's currently out in the world? And how can I use that to inform what might be the next step of evolution of those products and services? The third area is compliance and privacy. What do you need to do with your data to ensure that you are satisfying the needs of your customers with respect to their needs for privacy and regulatory compliance and all that? Look in financial services, you see a lot of anti-money laundering. They fit into that category. Fraud fits into that category, although it's all obviously related to customer 360 as well. But I've found that I can start almost every conversation with those three buckets, and then people will say, oh yeah, I am working on knowing my customer better. And I've been thinking about if we only had this app that did such and such. Or yeah, we are thinking about moving our products to a little bit more of consumption-based models. We need to be thinking about the data that streams off of those products. I've found that that's a great way to get people to start to hone in on use cases. The other thing too is you'll never come up with the end-all use case right off the bat. You gotta think iteratively. We'll come up with something. We'll try something. To me, in this space, it's more about do something. Prove something, prove that what you're trying to prove doesn't make sense, but do something and prove something and then move on from there.
How do we take ideas from other places then to make this easier? You talked about knowing your customer. If we look at marketing, marketing has used models of individuals, of customers, around which to pitch, around which to design campaigns. But at the same time, if we look at things like DevOps, we've used pipelines to speed things up, to route things where we want them, to make new patterns. Can we begin to actually take those models of people, models that then fit into our use cases, and use those pipelines to direct, if you like, the exhaust that's coming off all this information that we're gathering?
Absolutely. And yeah, Ian, we have decades ahead of us to get there. I like to break things down into pieces. I think about getting the data into this asset from a pipeline perspective. Within those pipelines, you could have machine learning models that are helping you to figure out which is the right data and improving the quality and all that kind of stuff. I tend to think about that piece of it, of building the data asset, a little bit more from the pipeline perspective. And then the use cases a little bit more, how are you consuming the data from that model perspective? I have now this data in front of me, I'm looking for groupings, or I'm looking for some certain pattern, or I'm looking for something that looks like this. And that's where you fit the models in to run across that data. Models, pipelines, blend, you become more mature. I mean, your first pipelines are probably very straightforward, where you're just moving data from one place to another and maybe standardizing one field, like standardize the name field or the address field, first step in the equation. And then over on the analytical side, it's, oh, I'll build a dashboard to show you something. Then from there, all the way to your data continues to be integrated from its source into this lake to gather up the ingredients of this data asset and be running various different models on it to understand what's in the data, to explore. That's a whole other piece that we miss a lot, data exploration. You don't just have this data that you've put together in an asset and then just create these use cases. There's the concept of explore the data, see what's in it, without even knowing what your use case might mean.
It's kind of like giving a bunch of Lego bricks to a group of children and seeing what they come up with, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's fascinating, isn't it? I recently read a Harvard Business Review article that said 45% of all newly created data records contain at least one error. Okay, so can you imagine, Ian, if I sent you into the kitchen and said, there's your ingredients, but every single one of those ingredients has something really wrong with it?
But that actually leads us into something else, doesn't it? The cleanliness of our data. If we look at the quantity of data we're gathering, it's dirty. It's always been dirty. Half-finished records, incomplete data imports, mismatches of fields. ETL has always been one of those subjects that people run and hide from when it's thrown at them. What is needed to get people to take data quality seriously?
We need to value ETL. I've recently, in the past few years, met more people that enjoy being data engineers, which is a really cool thing. The tools that data engineers have at their hands are getting better and better. That helps a lot. When you went back, let's say 7, 8 years ago with the advent of big data and Hadoop, a lot of the ETL pipelines had to be written by hand. If you think back to MapReduce, I don't think it was all that much fun. The tools are better. You're getting people talking more about data and data quality. So you're getting more people that are gravitating to that particular role in that field, and it's valued so much more. That's a really important piece. I remember we started talking about data science before we talked about data engineering. Well, how can you do science if you haven't engineered the components that you need to actually engineer something? So that was a miss, and that's a catch-up in our industry that has done really well. I wanted to tell you that precisely we did some work with Corinium, just produced this report. That's the Data Integrity Trends report. It was a survey of 300 or so C-level executives, a whole bunch of CDOs or things that were similar to CDOs. In that particular report, some of the things that came back were 42% of the executives were disappointed in the quality of their data. They don't trust the insights that come out of their data. This is one that I love, my favorite stat out of that report. 44% of the executives surveyed don't trust an analytical insight unless it matches their gut. Okay, why did you do analytics? If you think about that, it's like, wow, okay, we're not going to really trust these analytical insights from deep machine learning models or complex SQL statements and all that kind of stuff if the answer doesn't trust what I thought it was going to be.
This is something that's been broken for years. I can go back 2 to 3 decades and talk about working with marketing teams who would spend a fortune trying to get data to what they would consider 70, 80, 85% clean. They'd then spend a fortune having that data enriched. But that data would never be fed back into the core data pool and used as a new start point. It would be used for a project, thrown away. 6 months later, it's wash, rinse, repeat. If I'm honest, I look at the industry at the moment and I see wash, rinse, repeat. I don't see people taking that clean, that enriched data and using that as a new baseline. So what do we need to do? Is this a failure at the board level to demand it? Is this a technical failure? Is this a problem of too many people with fingers in the data pie?
It's at the core of what the chief data officer needs to be doing, which is to be explaining the reusable value of that data. People put the value on the use case, and that makes sense because that's where you can see the impact to the business. But the use case, like as I just said, people aren't going to trust the results if it doesn't match their gut. It's all dependent upon the data underneath. That's really why this chief data officer role, whether it's called that or called head of data and head of analytic, whatever it's called, really needs to be focused on that reusable data asset. You have a use case, you have a business partner, there's something they're trying to accomplish. You work with them to get them the right data. Then two things need to happen. One is you've got to get it into the right shape so that it can be used for more than that use case. Don't just drop it and walk away. That's the first thing. Value it, continue to improve it over time, keep rerunning that use case to make the results of that use case better based upon data improving. The second part you just hit on is equally important. We don't see happen a lot, and that's feeding the improved data back to the transaction systems, to the source. If you don't feed the data back to the transaction systems, then you're propagating that issue with newly created records not having errors in them. You propagate the culture. That's okay. If you're continually fixing the data so that people that are transaction processing see their data improving, that starts the whole idea of data integrity right down at the source, which is really important.
When you and I have spoken in the past, one area we've touched on is acquisitions. If we start with our data being dirty, and then we acquire a new company whose data is in some indeterminate state, We don't know what data we've got till we open the box. How do we get companies to deal with data as part of the acquisition process rather than a post-acquisition, oh my God, what have we got ourselves into?
You always end up in the situation where it's, oh my God, what did we get ourselves into? Because the fact of the matter is you acquire a business to accelerate revenue growth, to find new ways to reach customers, to expand your product portfolio, to get new talent. There's business reasons why you go out and do these acquisitions. In a diligence process, it's very unlikely you would ever have a situation where you'd say, ooh, your data really doesn't look good, so why don't you fix that up, and then we'll talk about acquiring you afterwards. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Let's just face the fact of the matter is you do an acquisition, then what underlies all those M&A drivers, the revenue growth, new ways to reach customers, expanding your product portfolio, getting new talent, it's data. Data about customers, data about products, data about employees. Fundamentally, M&A is about acquiring data. One of the things that I've learned in this space is you can't then say, woe is me. That doesn't ever really work in business. But what you can do is profile the data first when you get it. Very first thing is to take a look at it, use some of the automated tooling that's out there to verify your data, to find out what are the missing fields. We use Salesforce Insight precisely. Let's say we acquire a company that also uses Salesforce, but everyone knows that the fields are used differently, that the business processes are slightly off here or there. There might be something in the acquired company's Salesforce data that's completely wrong for what I need for that company to be integrated into precisely during that acquisition integration process. I need to work on data. We found in our company, because as I said, we've done many acquisitions and we just closed on one and we're integrating. We just announced one and it's going to close soon. So we've got many of these going on in parallel. Our two big work streams, one is around the infrastructure, servers, data centers, offices, laptops, the things you think about. The other one is data. We don't even really talk too much about what's your enterprise system versus our enterprise system and what are we going to do about it. We have our target environment. It's much more about what's your data and how am I going to make that data work in this broader company now.
But one of the challenges of acquiring that data, and one of the challenges we all have with our own data, is we carve out bits of data for projects and we keep that data sitting around. And before we know where we are, we've got 5, 10, 15, 20 copies of that data, except none of them are actually a copy of the data. They're a copy of bits of one set of data and bits of another set of data and maybe something we've done with it. How much data reduction do you see companies doing? And how much emphasis should there be on data reduction in order to get down to, again, clean data, trusted data?
People definitely have this tendency to grab a copy of data and hoard it. It happens all the time. I subscribe to the philosophy that in the asset, in the places where you have your data engineering team working, you are focused on making the data consistent and concise and accurate. If people are going to hoard data off in their own little corners, then at some point in time, your improved data asset is going to be shiny and theirs is not. I'd almost not even try to stop people from doing that. Cost will stop them if they start putting too much data in the cloud. InfoSec will stop them when we start to basically say you're putting data somewhere and it's not appropriately secured, you're using it for the wrong reasons. The governance pieces can actually help with that. But I don't subscribe to going out and finding that data and getting rid of it. I'm subscribed to the philosophy much more of what's in my data asset. How do I make it better? How do I make sure that we don't have dupes in that? I'll tell you, one of the worst case scenarios we had with one of our acquisitions was people saying, I have the ultimate data source and I'll send it to you. And it's a big Excel spreadsheet. And when that didn't work out, what was supposed to be in that Excel spreadsheet was supposed to be perfect. And it wasn't. And then they'd say, but I have another one. Yeah. So it's fun. It's definitely fun.
I started doing technology in the early 1980s when we had network databases and flat file databases and card databases and relational databases were just starting to be born. And we kept things in spreadsheets. And the early Lotus and Microsoft approach was that your spreadsheet is a database. Sadly, for too many businesses, particularly small to mid-sized businesses, we see the spreadsheet is the database. How do we break people of that habit gently rather than steaming in with a big stick.
Give them a way to produce a repeatable result that's of high integrity, and they'll move from their spreadsheet. But they won't move until you get to that point. I still see scenarios where we have customers where the data reaches a certain point of integrity that's really darn good, but then there's that last bridge to what the business needs still happens in Excel. You just keep working it and working it so the data can produce the right result for you. Then those spreadsheets will no longer be the master. One of the reasons why I love working at Precisely, besides the fact that we work in the data integrity space, our CEO has this philosophy that sunlight is the best disinfectant, and he wants dashboards out of the data in our systems. If the data is wrong and it shows the wrong result, he's actually like, that's good, because now we know. We'll go back and we'll fix it, and we'll fix it through those pipelines. We'll get back to source and fix it. He doesn't subscribe to that philosophy of just hand me something that has the answer I need. He actually wants to see it come from a repeatable solution. It's that kind of leadership that you need to continue to hone and look for in organizations. The chief data officer role, the visionary side of it, as you said, the politic, has to be really telling people and informing them and engaging them on what good data can really do for them.
There are so many questions I want to ask now after that, but time is catching up with us. So here's the gotcha at the end of all of my podcasts. Imagine you're stood on stage with a room full of people who are looking to become chief data officers. They want some guidance. What are the three things you can give them to take away as they start moving into that space?
Happy to answer that. First, I'm stuck on that room full of people. It's been a while since I've seen something like that, but I suppose wonderfully we'll be getting there soon. I would tell the set of folks that, first of all, get out there and establish that vision of data as an asset. That is the first and fundamental, most important thing that people need to be doing. It's got to be cross-functional. It has to be of high integrity with good quality, enriched. It's got to be reusable. It's not fit for one analytical purpose. In establishing that vision, get those executive sponsors. Find out who out there has a passion for it and just work with them and establish that vision. Number two, find a partner in the business and start with a smaller analytical use case and prove that you can deliver the use case through data that's been built in a reusable way, through a lake, a mart, a warehouse, something like that. Visualize that result so that people can see, oh, she's talking about this vision of this asset. That sounds like it's going to take a long time to get to. Yep, it is. But I've already proven it with a very small use case in that customer segment or that product segment or that compliance segment. We've done a small use case based upon that data. We can now see, oh, that result can get better and better if we improve the data. That brings me to the third, iterate. Just keep going. Just create a roadmap. Just be very iterative. Be iterative with your governance. Make things better all the time. There's no big bang in any of this stuff. It's just grinding it out, continuing to grind it out and proving value over and over again.
I think people are actually scared of that iterative step. They want to do it, sign it off, and move on.
Yeah, that's not how life works though, is it?
It isn't. Amy, thank you so much for talking with me today.
It was wonderful to speak with you, Ian.